an area of land in northern Canada so dangerous, it's now referred to as the Valley of the Headless Men.
Explorers either going mad or disappearing, never to be found again.
Numerous bodies found decapitated with unexplainable circumstances around their death.
Mysterious fogs, gold fever, cannibalistic tribes, strange creatures and serial killers.
All this and more in this episode of Metaphysical. All right, since 1908, more than 20 men have reportedly died searching for a gold mine in Canada's Nahanni Valley. Most of them perished by decapitation or disappearing completely. The mine they were looking for was the infamous Lost MacLeod Mine, made famous by the brothers who discovered it, Willie and Frank MacLeod, who were later also found headless. This area of land in the Nahanni Valley is now referred to as the Valley of the Headless Men. Well, who were these men? What caused their deaths? And most importantly, what makes the Nahanni Valley so treacherous, a land that terrorizes the natives, causing them to live in perpetual fear? Yeah, John, I mean, this is a really strange area of land in northern Canada. I mean, when you brought this place up to me, I was pretty confounded by all of the strange phenomena going on.
Yeah, it seems to have everything here. And then on top of it, you add headless men. And basically what you hear across the whole internet world, at the very least, is that if you go there, you will likely lose your head. And I hear a lot of talk in forums and whatnot saying, is it safe to go there now? Can we go there now? So this place has taken on just a massive amount of legend around it. And I'm happy to be going through this because it's so strange.
Correct. Yeah, totally. And you guys at home watching, like, we're going to be going through all of this over a couple of episodes. So definitely stay tuned. And I think, you know, just to fill you in, here's some details on the Nahanni National Park Reserve of Canada. The first humans in the area reportedly appeared about 9,000 to 10,000 years ago. There are two main tribes that we can find reference to in history. One is the Dene tribe, which most of the history comes from. The other is the Naha tribe that the Dene talk about and fear. The local history contains many references to the Naha tribe, which is a mountain-dwelling people who used to raid settlements in the adjacent lowlands. These people are said to have mysteriously disappeared into thin air, which you don't hear too many stories about, right? Much speculation has been made about what happened to these Naha, and if you want to hear more about that bizarre story, stay tuned because our next video just might leave you completely shocked. Present-day similarities between local Dene dialects and the Navajo language, which is in the southern United States, has led to speculation that the Navajo are the descendants of these missing Naha. The stories of the Naha and the dangerous landscape that they inhabited grew with the Klondike gold rush and an increasing gold fever in the area. So we've got legends of haunted valleys. Lost gold emerged after these headless corpses of prospectors Willie and Frank MacLeod were found in 1908. We're going to be getting into that very strange story soon. And in the years that followed, mysterious deaths of other prospectors only added to these legends. The other names of the park, such as Dead Man Valley, Headless Creek, Headless Range, and Funeral Range, bear testimony to these stories and legends.
And place names are always really interesting because place names, you can usually figure out what has gone on in there, in that location in the past by looking at the place names. This area pretty much hones in on it. Like, you don't want to go hanging out in places called Devil's Canyon and whatnot, right? It's just because there's been strange paranormal happenings there that go back to when Native cultures were living in the area. And they pretty much created the lore around it by their place name, what they called it. And then you also have, actually, I think this area, it being a World Heritage Site, is also one of the only volcanic or one of very few volcanic locations in Canada.
What's strange is the people out there that have explored the area and that do talk about the area make it so much scarier with how they describe the terrain. and the mountains, right, and these like jagged, very like impossible to climb areas that look terrifying, like they belong in a scary book. Guys, like a lot of the videos you will see out there about this are saying they're just regurgitating the same information, but we tracked down the true stories to most of these that have been going around. So most of what we're about to tell you are coming directly from old newspapers, the very source of where these stories came from that we read ourselves. Okay, so why don't we just get into it? These prospectors, Willie and Frank McLeod's headless corpses were found in 1908. They had supposedly found a literal gold mine, which later took on the status of the legendary Lost McLeod Mine. 20 people reportedly have died searching for the mine since then. The McLeod's brother, Charlie, was interviewed later by an explorer named Philip Godsell. Charlie claimed the murderer was my brother's partner, Wade. Now, a lot of people are confused about this. Why did these guys lose their heads? You know, what actually happened? People think that some strange creature happened, like came out from the woods or something like that. But here we've got a confession from someone. So the quote here in this book is, for years, Wade, he'd worked on one of the railroads, then on a lonely homestead, haunted always by the memory of his crime. Breaking under the strain, unable to stand it any longer, he climbed up on a haystack, set fire to it, and then sent a bullet crashing into his head. Charlie said Wade confessed to him, and gold, what, like the gold, the found gold, this gold fever was what made him commit these heinous acts. But now, more headless men were found there, and Charlie even found one when searching the area. And then that's not all. In 1917, a Swiss prospector named Martin Jorgensen, his decapitated body was found next to his burned cabin. In 1931, Phil Powers, a veteran trapper, was found by a constable. His cabin was burned, his skeleton charred, and his skull showed a bullet hole in the back. Now, on a tree near the ruined camp was found a piece of weather-stained paper bearing the faded inscription, Phil Powers finished August 1931. Which is like kind of freaky and mysterious. Like, what does that even mean? You know, was that somebody saying, I finished this guy? Note for other killers in the area? What was it, right? In 1946, Frank Henderson, a mining expert, reported his partner Jack Patterson hadn't shown up at their meeting point. He had just disappeared. And there's this quote from him. It says, all summer, I moved with the utmost caution, mostly at night, Henderson said. There is absolutely no denying the sinister atmosphere of that whole valley. The weird, continual wailing of the wind is something I won't soon forget. We've got a lot of
headless men.
Yeah, and we're not even...
We've got a lot of headless men.
Yeah, we're like halfway through. I mean, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, also known as the Mounties, worried that the headless valley may have claimed three more people, including a 28-year-old Seattle school teacher named James Watts and two unidentified companions, one a woman. They left here several months ago on a secret expedition, announcing they intended to return by August 28th. This Mountie police officials now believe that the secret expedition was a hunt for the legendary gold mine of fabulous wealth in the Headless Valley. During the past 8 years, the Mountie officials said that 11 persons had vanished mysteriously in the valley. None of them ever were heard from again.
Yeah, you can go missing out there. I mean, you can go missing out there. Like, I don't think it would be that hard for a person to hide a body out there with the amount of people that go through there. And so you have probably way more disappearances than is even known, never found.
Yeah. And actually, you know, I want to skip down now. Like there were other people here. 13 persons were believed to have lost their lives in recent years in the Nahanni Valley. A guy named Ernest Savard, 40 years old, well-known Ontario and British Columbia miner who was given up as dead in July. Mounted police records show that 12 others died in the valley, all of them under circumstances which pointed to foul play. But related to what you just said, John, and then in 1962, listen to this story. The pilot of a light aircraft miraculously survived a crash unscathed and set about building a camp a short distance from the place where the plane went down. He was so well equipped to survive with food, fuel, shelter, and camp provisions from the aircraft's cargo that he was confident that rescue would come within a matter of days. So he waited and wrote about his experiences in his diary. Many times he watched as searching aircraft flew overhead, but none saw him. He was only 6 miles as the crow flies from his destination, although he was probably unaware of his exact location. For around 50 days, he sat alone waiting for rescue, and then he mysteriously disappeared as the diary entries stopped abruptly. 6 months later, his plane was discovered by chance, followed by the camp and his diary. To this day, no further trace of him has been found.
Not even a head.
Not even a head. Just no, just totally disappeared. Okay, so one thing that really, really caught my attention as we were looking through all these mysterious deaths and disappearances, regarding the 1947 case of Frank Henderson, it was said that Indian legend links the valley with the mysterious disappearance of 13 white men, traders, trappers, and prospectors in the last 8 years. Now listen to this. Henderson spent the summer in Nahanni Valley, but said his Indian guides deserted him, fearing the headhunters. Native lore also talks about this figure of terror called the Nakani, which is basically like an evil Bigfoot with powers of hypnosis. One of the local legends is that a Bigfoot thing made a woman named Annie go crazy, and she was later seen on all fours skulking through the valley. Cannibal tribes of half Neanderthal men were also claimed to live, or have also been claimed to live in the mountains there. And we'll be getting into these stories in our next episode, but for now, I really want to know what exactly has happened to these headless men. Like, can we shed any light on that?
This is the core of the fear around this area, the headless men, basically. This is why people ask, is it safe to go there? Because I've never heard of another area that's got so much negative lore vibration than this area, and people actually wanting to go but afraid to go. You have to look, for one thing, at when most of the incidents were occurring, which was in a period in the 1940s, right? When we look at the origination point of the story of the headless men, we don't see anything related to some strange Neanderthal cannibals or paranormal happenings. Literally, what we see in our data are prospectors, prospector or prospectors trying to keep people out of the area, right? These guys probably knew in part that the native peoples of the region had those stories of cannibal giants and whatnot. And so they would kind of piggyback on those. And when you get into mines and where you have a lot of earth minerals that people want, like if you look at Peru, for instance, and the whole alien phenomena down there that we're currently seeing going on with the face peelers, I'm not saying that is an incidence like this where miners are using the lore of the people to chase them out so they can get all of the gold or whatever minerals out. But they do that a lot. Like this is a tactic used to get people off the land by using native lore, by creating new lore, expanding upon it, throwing some physical evidence into the mix so that people don't go near it. And so that's what we're seeing here. That's what we're seeing here in our data, is that it was literally a prospector or a group of prospectors that were interested in chasing most people out and keeping a lid on the place because, hey, that place is full of very interesting minerals that people want. Like literally, that's what it came down to. Nothing paranormal, nothing ancient, nothing alien when it comes to this.
Which, you know, so, we would hope it would be.
Well, you know, we'll get to that place later on because, you know, we can't like not go there eventually.
That is true. We have a knack for that. But, you know, I have a question for you. And I think a lot of people at home would be asking this because I think a lot of more innocent people would have a really hard time believing that humans could commit such atrocities just because they wanted riches. So what was it, really just this gold fever that was driving these men to kill other men, to cut their heads off, just to send a message to everyone else to stay out of the area?
Right. You're going down the path of like, wait, is there something driving people mad there in the valley, right? I mean, that's where you're going.
Okay, yes, I am going there. But it's like, is the thing that's driving them mad gold fever? Something that's just very, like, we're talking about one of the seven deadly sins here more than anything. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's like humans just being so greedy that they will do anything in order to keep these riches for themselves.
I mean, all throughout history, people will kill others, go into others' land and kill them through some justification, and then even take them as slaves, kill them, take them as slaves, take their goods so that they can have more while they're here on this earth. And I mean, even today, you watch a lot of movies out there revolve around money and stealing money and hurting other people to get that money and it being justified. Well, sort of. It's like sometimes a moralistic side is brought up, but most of the time it's like money is the most important thing. When you get that money, you're at the end of the rainbow. Hoorah! Like it's the best thing in the world. And so it doesn't matter how you get it. And that attitude has prevailed through human history for as long as we can see. So yeah, prospectors. I mean, think about it. Think about the danger you put yourself into to go prospecting. You are already like very hungry for that gold, that if something stood in your way, you would get rid of that. I mean, even today, if you jump a claim, you can be killed, and it's legal in most places. If you jump someone's claim, they can kill you. So there is that old cowboy.
This is Wild West stuff.
Yeah, it's Wild West, beyond Wild West. You're talking about a lawless land when this was going on, too. You know, 1940s in the U.S., totally different than 1940s way up in the north.
You guys were hoping for strange creatures. Wait until our next episode. We'll be getting into that. But John is bringing up, you know, psychotic individuals. And this next part of this episode is going to go head first into what we're finding that no one else has mentioned, that we're surprised that no one else has mentioned. Could there be more true crime mysteries going on? Okay. As of 1937, 13 men have already disappeared up the foaming Nahanni River that plunges from the unexplored hinterland between the Mackenzie Valley and Alaska. All but the last two of those 13 were later found murdered. The last two have never been found. This gets into the mad trapper of Rat River. And if you guys haven't heard about that, we're going to go into it now. What a great name. What the heck? Stories of the lost McLeod mine propelled the gold fever already in the area, as you can imagine. One man who went by Albert Johnson may have gone on his own search. And he was one of the most desperate and resourceful bushmen in the Arctic. In 1931, Indian trappers complained to the authorities that someone was setting off their traps, and they pointed to this guy named Johnson. So two Mounties went out to find him. Listen to this. They had to go miles just to get to Johnson's remote cabin. Some papers called him a demented hermit. Johnson had other plans. When they tried to question him, he fired, hitting the constable and setting off a firefight. More Mounties came later. Johnson's mad laugh echoed to them across the snow as bullets from his guns kept them at a distance. They wanted to starve him out or bomb him, but suddenly the cabin was quiet. Johnson had escaped into the woods, and he supposedly did it through a tunnel. What the heck? Now we've got tunnels? All right. Quote, blizzards that swept down from the Arctic Circle seemed to have no effect on him, and day after day, he kept up his killing pace over the barrens, unquote. So the Mounties had no idea how he kept himself going, when and where he slept, and how he got food. The authorities chased him for miles and miles as he made his way on foot. Listen to this. Quote, often he doubled on his trail so foxily that he was at his pursuer's rear watching his own pursuit. This guy's crafty.
Yeah, and he's running through tunnels. Huh. Interesting.
Or something. Like, he knows this land really well. So finally, there's this final shootout, and Johnson was killed. As one newspaper put it, frozen with his body was the secret of his madness. Okay, and his death ended up solving a portion of the Nahanni Valley mystery. One account we found said the authorities found that Johnson had a pile of gold teeth that had been taken from the mouths of dead prospectors in the Headless Valley.
Yeah.
So was Johnson a serial killer who murdered those people? Was he just greedy enough to yank out gold fillings from dead men he found in the woods? Was there something else going on? Local Mounties put it on file that Johnson was involved in the deaths, so it looks like he was responsible. Now we're going to get some remote viewing data from John. This is something that only our show can really do to find out what's actually happening with these mysteries.
This guy had serious, like, extreme gold fever. But it wasn't just him. It wasn't just him. Because these people were, there were a couple of different people who were in consort with each other. Some that were lesser known, that were in the valley or in the area. And so it wasn't just him. He was working with other people. And so this whole thing extended out further than just him. Yeah, he was responsible for quite a number of the deaths, but not ultimately all of them. This is the interesting part about this whole valley, is that it's taken on, the headless part has taken on this whole paranormal quality to it when it's not. For instance, this is probably the first guy who started killing people, but other prospectors, as they came in and out, I mean, I think people who are going up to this area, prospectors at that point in time, would probably be a little bit possibly mentally unstable to begin with, because that's a very hard and harsh environment to exist in. And they're going to be hard, hard, hard people. So like I say, it's a consortium. It's more of a consortium of people. And this is like one of the basis of how to get a mine in an area when there are other people in that area, right? You can go in and kill people, remove native populations from areas, or you can scare them out, right? And that's currently what this whole thing is about, scaring people out. We don't have the crazy paranormal stuff showing up.
How crazy do you have to be to go up there to find gold and then be so out of your mind that you just collect the gold and live in poverty off the land and then put gold teeth in you? Do you know what I mean? Like, how crazy do you have to be to do
that? I don't think that he was necessarily not doing anything with that gold. I think that gold was being transferred to somebody else or others that were taking it out. Because I think this was more of a concerted effort by individuals as opposed to one individual, at least shows up in our data. Because we get multiple individuals involved with this person.
But I mean, okay, but is this guy going back and forth from the Canadian mainland and he's only there a portion of the year? Because it's like, that's a very hard life to live.
And most likely he was. I mean, it's hard to see in remote viewing data that specifically, sure. But most likely, yeah, he was. You know, he's going home to his family in Anchorage during the winter times, and then, you know, gets home and he's like, how's it going, honey? Oh, yeah, everything's fine. While he's like creating the valley of headless men.
Right. Exactly. So, okay, who do you think was getting this money? Was it like higher ups? Like, he was working for someone. Do you think he was working for certain people?
Like, okay, so look at around Mount Shasta in the early 1900s. You had like J.C. Brown, for instance, with the whole mummies found in the Lost Cave near Mount Shasta, right? In this underground tunnel. He was employed by the Lord Cowdray Mining Company to go find gold. These guys, some of them were connected in with large companies who wanted them to go out and find, locate placer or gold or whatever, or veins of gold and granite, because you got a lot of granite up there. That would have been one of the areas that a lot of people would come to. So this guy and some others had found a cache of gold. They could have been backed by somebody, absolutely could have been backed by somebody. And then they kept others out because it's going to be an attractive point for geologists to go investigate looking for gold because of the amount of granite there and the amount of water there. And these people thought that, or their claim, that was their claim. That whole thing's their claim. That's what they thought. And this is the Wild West. They don't care. You know, you claim jump. Anybody that's going up there is claim jumping, a potential claim jumper. So just get rid of them. This is mine. And then they feel justified in that. And they don't have to be completely insane to do that because they feel justified. That's the law.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you take a shot at the wrong guy, a Mountie, and all hell breaks loose. We would love to hear what you guys think about this part of the Nahanni Valley story. And we are just getting started. We mentioned at the beginning that the Naha people mysteriously disappeared. And what of these creatures that live in the forests or the mountains of the Nahanni Valley? we've got strange occurrences all over this place, and oh gosh, stuff that no one is talking about that we're going to be hitting in our next episode about the lands far north, even ancient sites that no one has discovered. So for those of you at home, please definitely leave a comment below. Let us know what you thought of this episode. What other questions do you have about this? We can tackle that sometime soon on a live show or something like that. And we hope you guys thought that this episode was as out of this world as we did.